This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So, the only thing left to say is, you win? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus, rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Right. Okay. Right, see you. Sorry. Let's start. People will drift in over the next couple of minutes, but I think it's important that we cover it. The next issue was ticket touting, which is more wrapped up in the safety advisory group. I mean, I don't know if people are aware that the council have a statutory meeting, host a statutory meeting twice a year of the council, the police, the fire brigade, the
club.
The clubs, the John's Ambulance, British Transport Group, everybody except the supporters. And they discuss issues relating to match day safety, sort of wider issues. So Cliff and I, 2 years ago, started talking about this, and we suggested to the club that it might be useful to have someone at that meeting. And the club, to no one's surprise, didn't think it was a good idea we had someone at that meeting. So we approached the head of the safety advice groups, a woman called Anne Ramage, who happens to be a football fan. She works for Kensington and Chelsea, but she is chair of the safety advisory group. So I had a meeting with her, with people from the Fulham Trust and QPR, and she agreed that we wouldn't be able to attend the meetings at this stage, but we would be able to submit, have a pre-meeting with them, submit questions that they would discuss at the meeting, and they would have a briefing afterwards. Because there's a whole load of stuff that they cover. It's a 13-page, I won't read the detail out, but you can see there's a lot of information there in terms of individual incidents at games, right through to sort of medical provision, statistics on arrests, all this sort of stuff. But a lot of it is about match day processes. And as a result, for the meeting in July, what we've agreed is that we will email all of the trust membership and say, what issues have you got from last season? What concerns have you got about the coming season? We'll collate them, and then we will sit down with the council people, and they will take those and discuss them at the meeting. Because as an example, there was a, before the meeting in January, I raised the point that for some games there are coaches parked directly outside the shed exit, the way coaches on the other side of the road, and it gets very, very, very tight there. It's not the way I normally leave, but a few people had mentioned it to me. And when we played Man City, Man United last season, there were some problems. And the club had never raised this issue. It had never been raised at the safety advisory group. So the council, were, you know, they said, well, maybe it is useful to have supporters' input. So the point I'm making is, what input we get, we will take forward, and it will be discussed. What is interesting is, apart from Crystal Palace, whose safety advisory group is run differently, we're actually the first Premier League trust to have that meeting, to have that engagement, which can only be a good thing. I'd like to think, and I'm sure Cliff feels the same, that it won't be that long before we actually form members of that meeting.
No, but I think the club will continue to object to us, yeah, going on there, to be honest. It's ironic, really. The Met Police call us in fairly regularly for meetings with them. They're prepared to trust us with stuff that they do. the council obviously are happy to engage with us on it, but the only people standing between us and getting on there full time is the club, and they say there's confidential grounds that they might be discussing confidential matters on there. And that's the reason they don't want us on board. But I tend to think that a lot of it is because they don't necessarily report incidents to the safety advisory group, like Tim has just mentioned, and like a friend over here said about today's game. You know, I mean, that's something that should be brought up. Why are they allowing this sort of kick-off time in a potential troublesome London derby? So the club, I think, tend to tell them what they think they want to hear. They don't necessarily report any incidents. And so the problem is that if we went on there and started saying, well, we saw it kicking off against West Ham in the forecourt of the main entrance a few weeks ago.
Which you did, exactly.
And it would be interesting to know if the club do make any announcement of that incident at the next SAG. So, you know, we'll be pushing. We've got a little foot in the door, so hopefully in a year's time we'll be fully in there, but we can't guarantee it.
It would seem madness today to allow the Spurs fans out at the end of the game alongside the Chelsea fans.
Well, the direct question was asked at the meeting last week, is there going to be a holding? And the implication was that there would not be, but who knows?
If things are going right, they might have gone home by about 10 minutes ago.
And if they're going badly, the rest of the ground might be empty.
There was mention that the Cardiff game was the biggest major incident over the last few years down here, obviously, and the Cardiff fans that we've spoken to since were absolutely amazed that they weren't held in for a quarter an hour, 20 minutes after the game finished. And if the police or the club had done that, then all the incidents that happened wouldn't have happened. So it seems fairly easy. All right, it's an inconvenience to people holding them in for 15 and 20 minutes or 20 minutes, but if it prevents public disorder, then why not? It happens, as many people here know, for European games, you know, and then you kind of factor that into your mindset. It's a pain in the butt.
It doesn't happen here in European games. It happens abroad.
But also, issues that happen at away games can be reported there, because PC Paul Wright, who many of you would know as Goggles, is one of the attendees there. He does all the away games. So if our members have issues at away games, we can raise them and they will go through the correct channels. Yeah. It may not be quick, but they've sort of committed to that. Okay.
Otherwise, you wouldn't want to catch all.
No.
You'd want them to use their common sense.
Yeah, but it's the big stuff. But we won't raise. Course, we're not going to raise minor issues. No. It's only where there's a clear theme or something that appears to be of, you know, public order issue, I think. Right, the next item is covering the board elections, the AGM and the survey. I'd like to ask Paul to talk about the first two, the elections and the AGM.
Yeah, so most of you will be familiar with the election process generally. It hasn't changed over the last couple of years, so in summary, the elections will be held on the weekend of the first game of the season, and it will be on the alternate day to when we're playing. So that will be either the 13th or the 14th of August. We suspect we're less likely to be on TV this year. So
we'll be playing less.
That's quite possible. Likely to be on the 14th of August, I would imagine. In terms of election stuff, we will release the nomination forms and they'll become available 8 weeks beforehand, so I don't know if that worked out as the week of the 18th of June, and that will then be open for 6 weeks until the 29th of July when it closes, and from that point on there's a 2 week kind of hurdle period basically ahead of the election. The same will also apply for any motions from the floor for the AGM. There'll be a deadline of the 29th of July for that as well. Obviously encourage anyone who wants to stand for election to contact me or anyone else on the board for further information, and obviously encourage anyone who's thinking about it to do so. So there's no voting on either the election or the motions actually at the AGM. What will happen afterwards is we'll launch a SurveyMonkey account similar to the survey which we'll talk about in a minute, which basically lists the election stuff and voting and all the motions. That'll be open for 2 weeks, and after which the results will be out in the week commencing the 29th of August, I would imagine. New board will then meet and then sort of finalise positions with on the board. And just to flag early, there will be a new chair this year, as our rules dictate that you can only be a chair for 3 years. So it will be.
Moving on. Well, I'm still stand for the board, but I cannot be chair.
But yeah, I mean, if there's any questions on that, I can take.
Are you going to have an Obama type sort of farewell speech?
I might struggle to carry that off, I suspect, going on past four. I can't even remember the names of the trust board. I'm going to struggle.
Ronnie Reagan farewell.
Yeah. But Celia, do you want to talk briefly about the annual survey?
Okay. So we will be sending out the annual survey, and hopefully that will go out before the end of the season. We'll give you probably 4 weeks to complete it. There'll be this. Generally the same questions as there have been previously, but we will be asking about moving to temporary stadiums. I think that's one of the key differences that from last year, to get your input on things that have been discussed earlier, really. So, you know, how much time and money it's going to cost you to get there, whether you'd actually go, etc., etc. So hopefully we'll get the results compiled and a report created prior to the AGM on the second week of August. Yep. So that will be available then. So I would encourage you all to fill it out when it comes through.
And the great thing is the club are actually interested in the results.
Yes.
And they do actually, we get full house people, they do go through it, and that, you know, It's a foot in door for us, but also we ask questions they don't ask, so the answers do have some, you know, they are valid and they are taken into account, and they challenge some of the thinking behind it, but they can't challenge the figures because the figures are the figures.
Yes, so the more people we see, fill it out, the better it is. So they can't really challenge it. That's what our supporters are saying. Yeah.
See, it don't cost me anything.
No.
Well, I've got a free travel pass.
There'll be others amongst us who'll be doing that in a year's time, but anyway. Right. Before we come to the Q&A with Dan, we've got one other issue, which is Cliff to talk briefly about the Brompton Cemetery project, the initiative we started.
Yeah, this has been something that's been kicking about for years now. We've been hoping to get involved over at Brompton Cemetery to help clear the graves, predominantly of the Chelsea-related graves over there. We actually got round to doing it. The first ever one was on Easter Saturday. We had about a dozen, 15 people yep. turn up for it, and it was quite a rewarding couple of hours. There was a really, really badly overgrown grave belonging to I forget his first
Alfred
name.
James, was
Alfred
it?
James. He yep. he was the owner of the Rising Sun when Chelsea was founded there, and he was consequently on the first board of directors of Chelsea Football Club. But his grave had been really, really badly overgrown over the years, and we managed to clear a really large area around it, and people could access it now. Chris Mears, who's the grandson of or the son of Brian Mears, was with us, and. He also allowed us to get access for our next day over there to his forefather's graves, because Gus Mears' graves over there. It's in good order, it's a little bit tatty. We're going to sort of tidy that up the next time out. We're going to put some blue stones down in the pit of the grave, if you like, and generally tidy it up. But it was a really, really rewarding couple of hours. I mean, it's only, say, 2 hours over there, but... We had one guy who was very keen, came down from Nuneaton to join us for the day, which was nice. We work in conjunction with the club. They provided us with some tools for the day, and various wheelbarrows and shears and what have you. And with Rick Lanville, who's recently identified an unmarked grave of a Chelsea goalkeeper from the 1930s, who became a bit of a stalwart for the club. He, when he retired from playing, he came back as a coach or a yep. physio, and he actually died in the Midlands somewhere, and asked to be buried in Brompton Cemetery just so he could be near Chelsea Football Club. He's in an unmarked grave at the moment, and we're hoping to do some sort of crowdfunding over the next X amount of months and get a headstone for him over there. So it's all good stuff, and we hope to have another one maybe at the end of May. and another one in the summer sometime, which is obviously the prime time to get over there when stuff is growing and hopefully the weather's nice, and then maybe another one in the autumn sometime. But you know, we'll publicise it, and anyone who wants to come, you're more than welcome. There's a guy who comes with us from the Friends of Brompton Cemetery who's very knowledgeable about it all, and he can tell you all the fascinating tidbits about different graves over there. It might sound a bit morbid, but it's quite amazing.
One of the graves belonged to Kit Lambert, who was manager of the Who, and Diane Edwards, who some of you know, used to know Kit Lambert in the 60s, so we had this sort of discussion on the Who. Yeah.
And a recent addition, Bobby Campbell's over there, yep. So he was buried over there. So,
okay. Right, thanks, Cliff. Right, we've now got the remainder of the Q&A with Dan. We've already done the stadium and the CPO stuff, and we've had some questions in. If I just read them and then you play them as you want, Dan. Right, as someone who goes to every Chelsea game and all the post-match press conferences, what is your take on the difficult season now drawing to a close? Is there one reason or a series of issues for the underachievement?
In less than 3 hours.
Yeah,
exactly. It's my first book, isn't it? Where do you begin? I've spoken to a lot of people about this, and everyone's got a different theory about this. A lot of these conversations, you know, both people who work at the club, you know, people... long trips back from places like Swansea and Newcastle on trains and stuff like that, and everyone's got a different theory, but you know, it just seems to be a perfect storm, doesn't it? There seem to be so many things, that just little things that went wrong that added up to create one big thing. And one of the, you know, certainly the summer seems to have been, I think there's an acceptance at a high level in the club that the summer was an absolute dog's breakfast, that there was some poor planning going into pre-season. Everyone turned up late, players turned up out of form. That's something you can't necessarily control. But I think there was also a difficulty that we saw, being close to what was going on. It was clear that Mourinho didn't really know where to go when things got bad. It was something he'd never dealt with in his life before, and he found it very, very difficult. And I think the way maybe communication between him and the players went on from that point may have had an effect on where things ended up. He certainly found it very, very difficult, and there we are now. I mean, it hasn't either been great since Gus has come back, really, has it? Because everyone expected Gus was going to hit the ground running. But then, to be fair to him, and I've got a lot of time for Gus,
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Chidge.
JK! In all the years you've been following Chelsea, you hardly ever miss a match, home or away. But how would you feel if you couldn't be there and it's not on TV?
Oh, Chidge, I'd be bereft. Inconsolable. The thought of missing my beloved Blue Boys live. It's all too much.
I know, JK, I know. It's all a bit too much, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, panic not. NordVPN have come to the rescue.
They have?
Yep, NordVPN allows us to watch any match, even if it's not on live TV here.
They do?
Yeah, they do. With just one click, they switch your virtual location to a country which is showing the match, and they act as your cyber bodyguard whilst online, protecting your personal data and sensitive info like card details and passwords.
Oh, wow, great. I bet that'll cost me a fortune.
Actually, JK, it's only the price of a cup of coffee per month, and you can use your account across 6 devices. It's a bargain, JK. And best of all, no more tears for you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, NordVPN. I'm so happy I could cry. Where do I sign up, Jidge?
Well, to get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/Chelsea Fancast. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, and you'll help support the Chelsea Fancast. The link is in the podcast episode description box.
Had a lot of time for Mourinho beforehand, but to be fair to him, he had to pick the club up from a far deeper place than he did when Scolari was kicked out far earlier in the campaign, and with far less damage done.
So, exactly, yeah, and that's another thing, yeah. The depletion of that team that's carried us through the last decade. I think there's been a lot of very, very poor succession planning within the club, not just obviously managerially, but definitely on the pitch. And I can't quite believe we're getting to the position now where John Terry is probably approaching his last two games for Chelsea, and we still don't know who's going to be replacing him. No. But there we go.
And do we know for sure that he is going?
We don't know for sure that he's going. I think it's highly likely that he is going. What I understand is that Conte came in and had a series of chats with all the players just before he was, or around the time he was announced. My understanding is the conversation with JT was, despite having told everyone that it is the new manager's decision, that JT heard, well, it's out of my hands. There we are.
Okay. And sorry, Ian.
Just relating to that, you mentioned about Jose, a little bit about Gus as well. There's not a lot of love lost, as you know, down on social media with respect to Emanalo.
Yeah.
Now, I'm wondering if you have any particular access to him, whether you would be of the view that he is the individual that will be perhaps trying to get it right this summer in terms of, you know, the signings and getting things in place. Do you get the impression that he is right at the heart of things still?
He's technical director. He's, as far as I hear, has got an awful lot of... he certainly has a vision for where he thinks the club's going. The difficulty, not necessarily of the man, but of the role, is that there's only one person that runs Chelsea, isn't there? And, you know, no matter what job you do, he's the man you've got to answer to. And the understanding from the many managers there've been and the many different directions there've been within the club is that his decisions change with the wind, you know. And I have no doubt at all that Roman is 100% behind Chelsea. He's passionate about this club, and he wouldn't have spent the money he had if he wasn't. He loves and adores football. People I've spoken to about him say that if you go to his house, there's a TV on in every room, always playing football. Not just Chelsea, but he just adores football, and he adores Chelsea. But he does change his mind with frequent...
questions. That's not easy, being advised by the right, you know, the appropriate first-class, top-class people.
He's being advised by the people he wants to be advised by, I think, is the answer.
I think it highlights the fact that he's a fan if he changes his mind week by week. I mean, that's what we do.
So, you know, he's a grown up.
And I mean, related to that question is, are you optimistic about next season from a footballing perspective?
Crikey. I don't know, are we optimistic about next season?
I think we've won the league already.
Yeah. I'm at heart a Chelsea supporter who started going in the 80s, so I'm fairly pessimistic about everything.
Yeah.
So, you know, I never expected any of the things that we ever won to be won. But, you know, Conte seems like a good guy. He certainly knows what he's doing. The difficulty, of course, is he's never been in the Premier League before, and he's been out of club management for 2-3 years. But he will come in and he will rule that dressing room with a rod of iron, it would appear. The stories from people like Pirlo and other people who play for him in Italy say that he's not a man to be messed with, but that he carries everyone, absolutely everyone, along with him.
I think we need to accept that, though, that he's going to ruffle feathers. There's going to be players who won't
enjoy suffering,
but they need to be discarded.
But rather than bleating to Emanalo,
and if he's the guy who's going to come, well, I think we need that iron rod. You know, Gus is coming, he's too friendly, happy, chappy, and all this kind of stuff. We need to know, just seriously, kick ass. And if Hazard doesn't like that,
But the conversions of the two last questions, you know, we've got a guy here who likes to be in charge and likes to know he's in charge, but he's never ever going to be in charge of buying and selling players because that is somebody else's job within the club. And no matter who Chelsea put into that position, that I understand is going to be the case.
But that's the view in Italy anyway. Yeah, the whole model of Italy, that's all he knows. I mean, the issue about him, Conte in Italy, is the fact that he's regarded, that Mourinho's wasn't particularly loved in Italy, even for his time at Inter Milan. And I think he was saying that Mourinho is regarded as quite conservative compared to Conte's management style. So I don't know how some of the difficult players who didn't necessarily expect to be, or didn't necessarily regard themselves as being professional footballers, as opposed to footballers who take their wages, will actually feel, because if they think they've had a hard time under Mourinho, they're going to have a worse time under Conte, as far as I can see.
But even if the guy is strong, it's the leadership on the pitch. I'm sounding like an old record here, but I know we're all saying it. Where's that going to come from? And that's the major concern to me.
I think I don't know how anyone else feels, but I think it's been sort of quite welcome this season, in that it's reinforced our bond with the Chelsea that we first knew when we started supporting them. I think that's been reflected in the attitude in the stadium. Even after that ridiculous performance against Man City, when half the team weren't even bothered to jog, let alone run, they were not booed off the field. So, I mean,
that's because half the crowd were gone.
I don't think we'd hear that at other clubs in a similar situation. I think it's really fitting that in a year that we've really messed up, that Leicester are on the verge of winning the title, and that we are actually in a position to win the league for a second year albeit for someone else.
And then finally to
thrash Leicester in a couple of weeks' time, and thereby taking the title of moral champions.
Good luck arguing that one over the summer. Okay, the next one is more about your experiences with the last few managers, what they've been like at press conferences. Have they all been the same, or are some easier to deal with than others?
I started reporting on the club 12 years ago. So the first manager I dealt with as a journalist was Ranieri, who was everything you're seeing now. You know, just a lovely, very emotional man who was completely batty and would say ridiculous things sometimes, but was just so completely lovable. Then who was next? I lose count.
Mourinho, Scolari, you know, pick highlights if you like. There's too many to.
Joe, I think the thing that unites them all is that when things are going well, they're fantastic to deal with, and when things aren't going well, they're absolutely awful to deal with. So I don't remember too many good times with AVB.
Or Scolari?
Who?
Or Scolari barely spoke the language, so. AVB is the only one I properly fell out with, to be honest. Who up at West Brom, which was the tolerated each other for quite a long time, but his last game up at West Brom, where the away end was seeing getting sacked in the morning, and I put this to him, and he said, no, they weren't. Well, actually, they were. They were, and what's more, I've got lots sort of text messages from three people in there who are belting him out on them, belting it out themselves, and he just stormed off. Oh, print what you like. Okay, I will.
And he went the following day?
Yes. So I actually asked him the last question that anybody asked him. Other than, can you clear your desk? It'll be very disappointing if you'd hear that Rafa, at least until a point where it became unworkable, was a very, very nice man and very good to deal with. But then Rafa's a PR man, and you know he wanted to create a good impression. He was clearly putting himself in the shop window to try and get what he considered to be a better job, or indeed the permanent job.
So you mean he was really an utter bastard? He was just pretending to be.
I've heard reports from behind the scenes at Chelsea that he's been the most polite, well-mannered manager that they've had in the last 10, 12, 20 years. He's been very, very nice fella.
Sounds really sneaky to me.
Yeah.
He did a bloody good job.
He did.
I wrote to him to say so. Fair play. I'm not the neatest fan, but he did a bloody good job.
What about Di Matteo?
Di Matteo was lovely because, as a fan, dealing with Di Matteo was wonderful because he was one of my heroes when he was a player. And, you know, I remember one occasion, it was before the semi-final at Wembley against Tottenham. How did that game finish again? And it was the match at Cobham, the press conference at Cobham the day before. And I asked him about the goal he scored in the 6-1 against Tottenham, which was, if you remember, like a 30-yard pile driver. And he goes, yep, I remember it because it was my left foot. And as he came out, we had a little chat, and I got this up on YouTube and I showed it to him, and he goes, told you it was left foot. And he got all sort of slightly dewy-eyed and sighed about it. So yeah, it was great. Miss him a lot, actually.
Yeah, I bet. Okay, that's interesting. Yeah,
because they're not all the same. And Ancelotti, the other one, I guess.
Ancelotti is the one a lot of journalists will say was their favourite because, you know, he was just a geezer, basically. And he would, you know, when he got off the record and stuff like that, he'd tell dirty and completely unprincipled jokes. you know, it was, you know, he'd love a glass of red wine. When we won the league with him, you know, he was given a glass of the Chelsea, Chateau Neuf to Chelsea, whatever it was. And so, because he's well known for liking a glass of wine, and he was asked, what's it like? And he said, it's shit.
Excellent. Great. Right. And then, final one. Of the Chelsea teams, players and matches you've ever seen, what are your favourites and why?
Although it was impossible to watch at the time, and I'm sure everybody will agree with this, Munich is obviously very, very high on that list. But when you all went down the pub and got slaughtered afterwards, I had to go into the mix zone, which wasn't in any way an imposition that night. Because normally, after a European game, you're lucky if you can grab one or two words from some guys, and if we lose, you won't get a word from any of them. Which is unfortunate because it shows them up to be a slightly pampered and tetchy group. But that night, everyone was stopping. Absolutely everybody wanted to stop. And I was, at the time, I was doing some shifts on the South London Press. And we got, I went off before the weekend and we had nothing to put on the front page. And when I got back on the Monday morning, I walked into the office and I spoke to the editor and I said, well, I've got this story about a lad from South London who won the European Cup. And it was Bertrand who just said everything, again, just with that glint in his eye and that look of glee on his face about how he grew up in Peckham, he kicked the ball against the sign that said, don't play ball games here, and how proud he was, you know, his brothers would be proud of him. And it was the only time the South London Press has ever had Chelsea on the front page.
Aren't they a Millwall paper?
They're a Millwall paper, yes.
Excellent.
Yeah, look at how we treated him.
Yeah. Yep. Well, bizarre, isn't it? Okay, and any other sort of teams or players or anything?
Player Lampard for me. Probably, I mean, aside from Munich, my very, very best moment was interviewing Lampard after he got the record up at Villa. And just another brilliant moment where he just talked with such enthusiasm and real heart. And, you know, I mean, players say, do this, I love this club thing. Very easily, don't they?
Yeah.
But Lampard really did and does.
Some of the current lot say it, but whether they mean it. Ian?
Can I ask you, I'm always quite interested in what the press write about our club, you know, beyond just the reporting of games and scores and all the rest of it. And what I was wondering was, in terms of the way the press are dealt with at Stamford Bridge and the experience of being a journalist at Stamford Bridge, does that help foster a sort of, you know, a positive view, just in terms of some of the practicalities, you know, the Wi-Fi, what the desk is like, the video screens and all the rest
of it. Best food in the Premier League. Yeah. Best food by a long way in the Premier League. And Man City always win that crown. I don't know whether they have a guy who stands at the door and shoves the voting forms into journalists' hands at Man City, and Chelsea don't do that so much. But yeah, it does. I suppose
the question would be as well, given that, you know, this board has good access to the Chelsea board as well, is there anything that, you know, we could perhaps be bringing to the Chelsea board to say, look, you know, to make it even better, why don't you think about this, or why don't you do that for? I mean, I've heard about, maybe not so much journalists, but, you know, photographers slightly at the back of the queue in terms of whether it's the buffet or, you know, the best views and so on. But I just don't know if you have anything, or other clubs have a sort of best practice.
I just think a general, I mean, a lot of people will look at it and they'll see a piece of newspaper that is, by their perception, negative towards Chelsea. And the standard response people have is, oh, just ban the lot of them. They'll write lies, get rid of them all. You know, people have tried that. Bates tried that. And all it created was more and more antagonism towards the club. You need to have a positive relationship with journalists. And Chelsea is very good at doing that these days, I think. Certainly, the current media regime, you all know Steve Atkins, is very fair to deal with, maybe not always give me the answer that I want, but then he's very professional. Certainly better than people we've had in the past who shall remain nameless, who once phoned me up in the middle of my Christmas lunch to call me a four letter word.
Would this be some green?
But very, very positive, I think.
Thank you.
Good. Okay. Right. Paul, how are we doing for time? We've got, if anyone
Yeah. If anyone's got any other questions for Dan while we're here, those were the ones that
happened tonight.
Wait, you're off to the bookies after this, are you?
Go on, tell us.
I think there's going to be a lot of the Williams song tonight, isn't there? And there's going to be Champions of England. You're never seeing that quite a lot as well.
You lost the league at Stamford Bridge. You lost the league at Stamford Bridge.
That'd be nice, wouldn't it? Oh, lovely.
Any other questions for Dan before we wrap up?
How is Alibra's election still alive?
I'm not sure I can answer that one.
We'll leave that one hanging then. Yeah.
Okay.
If there's no more questions, then thank you all for. Thanks everyone for coming. Thank you, Dan. We will. The audio, such as it is, will be up hopefully in a few days. Debbie's done some. Can do some brief notes, which will be circulated. If anything big happens over the summer, we will do a VGM, sort of, rather than a physical meeting, we'll do a VGM over the summer, but we'll keep people posted. But as Paul said, the next big meeting for us is the AGM on the 13th or 14th of August. But thank you all for coming, enjoy tonight, and here's to Leicester City.
It's the 90th minute, all your mates around, you've got your McNuggets share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect! Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.